Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph, dated Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article entitled Wild Weather, 2019 Year of Extremes for State, Wet Start for 2020, by Lenore Sabota. A couple of days does not a year make, but people can be forgiven if the recent deluge gives them a sense of déjà vu about the rainy year that just concluded. And the Federal Climate Prediction Center shows elevated odds for above-normal precipitation throughout the state in its January through March and March through May outlooks, noted state climatologist Trent Ford. Ford said 2019 was quite a roller coaster, and meteorologist Chris Miller of the National Weather Service in Lincoln called it a year of extremes. In a typical year, Bloomington Normal would receive 39 inches of liquid precipitation, according to weather records cited by Miller. Instead, the official reporting station in Normal measured just under 49 inches in 2019, and that's with the last 2 months being pretty dry. That's still a far cry from the 63 inches that were recorded in the record-breaking year of 1993, which has become a benchmark for Midwest flooding, said Miller, but it's still a lot. What stands out about 2019 for Ford is that, quote, the persistent wetness was absolutely incredible, close quote. Ford said, "It will be remembered as a year when we had a confluence of events, the timing of which made things particularly difficult for farmers. May was really what broke a lot of records, and that's a crucial time for planting," said Ford. Miller noted that soils were already wet with above-average precipitation in January, February, and March. In fact, Ford said, December, November, and July were the only 3 months that had precipitation below the 30-year average in 2019. At a weather station in Minonk that has had consistent observations since 1895, last year was its wettest ever at 57 inches, said Ford. The previous high was 54 inches in 1982. Breaking the previous record by 3 inches is quite a task, he said. For other long-term observers in the Bloomington Normal area, it might not have been the wettest, but it was definitely in the top five, said Ford. Rains returned in fall just in time to delay harvest for many farmers. Ford cautions against saying 2019 will happen all over again. It was such an anomaly. However, folks should be aware and try to do what they can now to address wetter than normal conditions, he said. Soil moisture maps are at the forefront of what we're thinking about, said Miller, and those maps were showing high moisture content even before heavy rains arrived on Friday. Ford said that's something that is a little bit of concern for meteorologists. While the rain in 2019 was memorable, so were the temperature swings. Bitter cold descended on the state in late January 2019, with many locations reporting wind chill temperatures of 50 below zero on January 30th and 31st, noted Miller. There was snow on Halloween and very cold temperatures on Veterans Day, he added. Then came December, with record warm temperatures on Christmas Day. Stations across the state and temperatures on Christmas Day and Eve were 15 to 25 degrees above the 30-year average, said Ford. The warm streak lasted from December 20th to December 29th, with 104 daily high maximum temperature records and 27 daily high minimum temperature records broken during that period, he said. It's not rare for temperatures to get pretty warm in wintertime, said Ford, but it is unusual for it to last that long. The next story on the front page is Council votes to update Lutz Road. Narrow street serves Luther Oaks area. This is by Maria Nagel. Laura Bau has been advocating since she moved into Luther Oaks on its opening day in 2007 for upgrades to make Lutz Road safer to travel. Her wait ended Monday night when the Bloomington City Council voted 8-1 to approve an economic development agreement with Luther Oaks owner Lutheran Life Communities that includes the city improving the portion of the road that serves the retirement community in southwest Bloomington. She has been a champion of this for 12 years, and to see the smile on her face and to know that we've finally found an answer to get this taken care and addressed, it's gratifying, said Luther Oaks Executive Director Don Rutter after the meeting. We did it, said Bao after the meeting. I really consider it a win-win because Luther Oaks is going to do some expansion that's needed, and then also we're going to get the road we've needed ever since Luther Oaks was built. The city will pay up to $980,000 to improve Lutz Road from the Luther Oaks entrance to Morris Avenue, a stretch of about 1/3 of a mile. The road was built to rural standards. It runs west from Morris Avenue to Greenwood Avenue and is 15 feet wide, about half the width of a standard city street, and has narrow shoulders, no curbs, no sidewalks, and poor drainage, according to a city consultant's engineering report issued in 2014. Lutheran Life agreed to provide a minimum investment of $1.5 million to expand its campus within the next 5 years as part of the deal. If it does not, Lutheran Life will have to pay the road improvement costs. Luther Oaks' planned campus expansion will include, but will not be limited to, new resident common areas, including additional wellness and fitness amenities and a fine arts center/chapel that could accommodate community, entertainment, and cultural events for both Luther Oaks residents and the public. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Carrillo said that she voted against the agreement because it would be extremely difficult for me to go back to my constituents who live in some of the oldest areas of town where there have not been significant improvements to infrastructure and say, we've just spent $1 million redoing this road that serves a very narrow population. Certainly, it isn't that I'm not sympathetic to the concerns of the folks who were here tonight and have been advocating for improvements to the road, Carrillo added. I don't disagree that the road is subpar and something needs to be done about it. I'm just not quite sure this is the fix that I was looking to see. Ward 2 Alderwoman Donna Bolin, whose ward includes the facility, said she appreciated the advocacy of Bao and others. She noted Luther Oaks is home to more than 200 people and that Lutz Road also serves the Wittenberg Woods at Prairie Vista Subdivision. Trinity Lutheran School is nearby. The road is failing and unsuitable. Promises were made years ago, said Ward 4 Alderwoman Julie Ermig, and explaining why she supported the measure. I maintain that we can prioritize the need to improve facilities for our growing elderly population as a gateway for potential economic expansion and the development, and that at the same time we need to be mindful of the entire city and the needs of all, she added. In September 2000, the city and Trinity Lutheran Church entered into an annexation plan with provisions for sewer and water hookups and road construction adjacent to the property now under lease to Luther Oaks. Next, we have an article, Kendrick Weichel Ready to Lead Unit 5 Schools. New Superintendent Sees Relationships, Vision as Key to Job. This is by Kelsey Watznauer. Building relationships, strengthening finances, and fixing transportation. The next superintendent at McLean County Unit 5 said she is ready to hit the ground running to tackle these major challenges in the Normal-based school district. Having that clear and ongoing communication will be really important as I start the new position and develop a vision with the staff and community, and then communicate the progress towards that vision, said Kristen Kendrick Weichel, who was approved at a special board meeting Wednesday to become Unit 5's 13th superintendent. She received a 3-year contract to start the job July 1st with a $185,000 annual salary. But Kendrick Weichel said she wasn't looking for a new job when she saw the opening at Unit 5. I have been very happy at Warrensburg Latham, she said, of the district she currently heads. It's a great district, great community, but when I saw that Unit 5 had an opening, I've always thought highly of Unit 5, so I was intrigued. When I saw what they were looking for, I felt that was a good match to my strengths and skill set, and going through the process, I personally feel like we're a great fit for one another, she said. Board President Barry Hitchens said that out of 32 applicants, I think we've got the right one. She's incredible, he said. In her interview, she was very personable, very energetic, and she just drew you in, and we think that's the type of energy that we need in Unit 5. A special education background in her 23 years in education also made Kendrick Weichel stand out for Hitchens. She is superintendent at Warrensburg Latham, a district just northwest of Decatur that serves about 1,000 students. When faced with the size difference between her current district and Unit 5's 13,000 students, Kendrick Weichel said she's used to big districts too. I've been a teacher at elementary and high school levels. I've been an elementary principal. I've been a director of special education in a large unit district. And so really, all of my experiences from big districts and small districts, I think, have helped shape me into the educator I am, she said. She previously served as Director of Special Education for the Special Education Association of Adams County and as principal in the Quincy School District. She also was an adjunct professor at John Wood Community College in Quincy. The Unit 5 board voted 6-1 to approve Kendrick Weichel as the second woman to lead the district. Board member Kelly Pyle, who cast the sole dissenting vote, said she thought other candidates more closely aligned with the superintendent profile developed in the hiring process. We took a lot of input in developing that profile. It was taken from staff, teachers, community leaders, administrators, and so I felt that there were other candidates that more closely matched that profile, Pyle said, though she didn't identify which criteria she thought were missing in Kendrick Weichel. The next article is also by Kelsey Watzenier, entitled Convention Hosts Esports Play Legendary Gamer. Gamers, artists, developers, competitors, collectors, cosplayers, and video game Hall of Famers will fill Grossinger Motors Arena this weekend for the 3rd annual Bloomington Normal Video Game Convention and 66 Games Expo. Anyone with any interest or involvement in the gaming industry would enjoy the convention, said organizer Ryan Toschler. The 66 Games Expo is a weekend of family-friendly and nostalgic gaming, good for collectors and enthusiasts alike, he said. A League of Legends esports tournament will begin Friday night and continue through the weekend, drawing in hundreds of competitors. The main convention will be from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Tickets are $13 per day or $30 for the weekend for adults. Children 12 and younger cost $6. Spectators are welcome to watch the League of Legends action, but anyone can sign up to participate in a few smaller tournaments. These tournaments will showcase classic and updated games, including GoldenEye 007 on Nintendo 64 and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Attendees can also face off against some of the top players in the world for a tournament called Kong Off. Billy Mitchell, the man who achieved the first ever perfect score in Pac-Man and has set several gaming records, is the event's special guest and will talk about the so-called impassable kill screen in Pac-Man. He is one of the people who inspired competitive gaming in the first place, Toschler said, adding he's a quintessential part of arcade gaming. Representatives of the International Video Game Hall of Fame will present the nominations for 2020 at 2 p.m. Saturday and award some of the 2019 winners. Besides tournament play, hundreds of tables filled with games and collectibles will be available at the expo, which is expected to draw more than 2,000 people. Next, 16 years ordered for drug dealing, by Kelsey Watzenauer. A Bloomington man was sentenced Thursday in federal court to more than 16 years in prison for his role in a crack cocaine trafficking conspiracy in 2018. Raymond Stevens, 31, of the 100 block of Exton Drive, was arrested in November 2018, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Central District of Illinois. On September 4, 2019, he pleaded guilty to participating in the conspiracy and 8 counts of related possession and distribution of crack cocaine in the Bloomington Normal area, the office said in a news release. A co-defendant, Khalil Hood, 29, also pleaded guilty to the conspiracy and 1 count of possession of crack cocaine with the intent to distribute. He is scheduled to be sentenced January 31st, the office said. 3 additional defendants from Bloomington faced state charges in McLean County, court records said. Lorenzo Aiken, 39, of the 600 block of South Lee Street, pleaded guilty in March 2019 to delivery of 15 to 100 grams of cocaine. Larry Lanier, 54, of the 2000 block of East Empire Street, was charged with permitting an unlawful use of a building and possession of a controlled substance. Damone Clemon, 45, of the 2000 block of East Empire Street, was charged with unlawful possession of 15 to 100 grams of cocaine with intent to deliver. The cases for Lanier and Clemon remain pending. During their investigation, officers recovered more than 300 grams of cocaine, 4 handguns, a pistol grip shotgun, and a bulletproof vest. Next, we have an article, Gun Dealer Rules to Start, by Peter Hancock. New rules governing how retail gun dealers do business go into effect Friday and include the types of records they must keep, how weapons and ammunition are to be stored, and the kinds of video surveillance and security systems they must maintain. The rules, established by the Illinois State Police and scheduled to be published in the Illinois Register on Friday, will go into effect almost 1 year to the day after Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the Firearm Dealer License Certification Act into law. The act requires firearm dealers who have a federal firearm license to also obtain a state certificate and comply with state regulations. Pritzker signed the bill, the first of his administration, after it passed during the 2018 legislative session. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner was in office when it passed, but Democratic Senate President John Cullerton used a procedural maneuver to hold on to the bill because Rauner had vetoed similar legislation that spring. The bill was viewed at the time as a response to rising gun violence in parts of Illinois, especially Chicago. It was aimed at preventing theft or other diversion of guns from firearms dealers and to crack down on so-called straw purchases, in which someone buys a gun on behalf of someone else who is legally prohibited from owning a gun. ISP initially proposed administrative rules in August and held a public hearing on October 24th in Springfield. But those proposed rules sparked fierce pushback from gun dealers around the state who said compliance would be excessively expensive. Of particular concern was a proposed rule that would have required dealers to maintain video surveillance at several points in their stores. Dealers would have also had to maintain those recordings for 90 days and back them up to an off-site storage system, such as a cloud or server. Gun dealers also complained about other proposed rules that would have required them to have written plans for storing all inventory, both during business hours and after closing, and to keep ammunition in a restricted area of the store not accessible to customers. Some gun shop owners said compliance would be impossible. Following that hearing, ISP revised many of the proposed rules, eliminating the requirement for backup storage of video surveillance, according to a copy of the rules provided by ISP. But that pushed the rulemaking process beyond January 2nd, when gun dealers were to come into compliance with many portions of the new law. As a result, ISP is using its emergency rulemaking powers, which allow regulatory agencies to put rules into effect immediately for a maximum of 150 days while final rules are being drafted. Those proposed final rules could be subject to another public hearing, further revision, and review by the General Assembly's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, or JCAR. The law is also the target of a lawsuit filed by the Illinois State Rifle Association, as well as several gun shops. Plaintiffs argue the law places onerous restrictions on firearm dealers that would force many stores to close and others to pass the higher costs on to those who would be seeking to exercise their constitutional right to keep and bear arms. That lawsuit is pending in Sangamon County Circuit Court. Next, odontologist to speak at Eureka College. Ernest Jackson, the first and only board-certified African-American forensic odontologist, will speak at Eureka College's program honoring the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. on January 21st. Living the Dream in the 21st Century and Beyond is presented by the college's Inclusive Excellence Committee. Jackson will speak at 6 p.m. at Becker Auditorium, Donald B. Cerf Center, following the college's Day of Service on January 20th. Forensic odontologists use dental records to identify victims of disasters or crimes. Born and raised in East St. Louis, Jackson graduated in 1988 from the School of Dental Medicine at Southern Illinois University and holds a master's degree in criminal justice from Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri. He received dual bachelor's degrees in biology and medical technology from Xavier University of Louisiana in 1975. A fellow of the American College of Dentists, the International College of Dentists, and the Pierre Fauchard Academy, Jackson's certifications include criminal immunology and interpretation and forensic pathology investigation. He has worked with many U.S. law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, and as a special consultant for the U.S. Department of Justice's Attorney General's Office as a forensic odontology consultant. He was the Assistant Chief of Forensic Odontology in Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm. He served in the U.S. Air Force for 25 years and retired with the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. He currently is Director of Dental Services for the Missouri Department of Corrections. The Day of Service on January 20th will feature a breakfast and variety of hands-on service projects in the Tarot Rooms of the Surf Center. Next, Lightning Causes Lexington Fire by Kelsey Watzmeyer. A lightning strike led to a house fire in northeast Lexington early Saturday morning. A large tree and a natural gas line was struck about 2:40 a.m., igniting the house near the corner of Vermilion and Chatham Streets, Lexington Fire Chief Mark Brown said Monday. Two residents were asleep inside when the fire started, but two neighbors, including a Lexington firecracker, heard the crack of a lightning strike, saw the flames, and called 911, Brown said. The neighbors woke the residents, allowing them to escape before smoke and fire entered into the home. Lexington and Towanda Fire Departments responded to the scene about 2:45 a.m., before calling in crews from Chenoa Fire Department to help as well. The fire spread from the tree and the gas line to the house, moving up the outside of the house and into the attic. Firefighters had the blaze under control within about 45 minutes. NICOR was called in to shut off the gas line. No injuries were reported in the fire. A damage estimate was not available, but Brown said the roof of the house was burned through. The second floor had extensive fire damage and smoke damage spread into the rest of the house. McLean County Sheriff's Office, Ameren, Illinois, and USIC also responded to the scene. Cooksville and Colfax Fire Department stood by at Lexington, Towanda, and Chenoa Fire Stations while their crews were busy. Next, Mount Pulaski water order lifted. Nitrate levels have returned to regular levels in Mount Pulaski, which has been under a drinking water order since December 31st. High nitrate levels are especially problematic for babies younger than 6 months old and for the elderly. The town is continuing to monitor the levels. Previously, families with those age groups were asked to use bottled water. Water sample results received December 26 showed nitrate levels of 11 milligrams per liter, which is higher than the maximum contaminant level of 10 milligrams per liter. Boiling tap water makes the problem worse because the nitrates can become concentrated when the water evaporates. The same issue occurs when freezing, filtering, or letting water stand. Nitrates can come from natural, industrial, or agricultural causes, including septic systems and runoff. Next, we have State Ag Director quits amid rape email scandal. Pritzker disturbed. Sullivan knew about email but didn't act. This is by Dan Petrella from the Chicago Tribune. Governor J.B. Pritzker's top agricultural official resigned this weekend after the administration learned he had knowledge of a July 2012 email in which a powerful lobbyist and close confidant of Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan sought leniency for a state worker who, he said, had, quote, kept his mouth shut about the rape in Champaign, close quote. Pritzker was disturbed that John Sullivan, a former longtime state senator from Rushville in western Illinois, became aware of the existence of the July 31, 2012 email contemporaneously and did not handle it appropriately, including not alerting the inspector general or other authorities. Pritzker spokeswoman Emily Bittner said, in a statement on Monday, the governor's office asked for Sullivan's resignation, which he gave, Pritzker's office said. Sullivan, who did not seek re-election in 2016 and joined the Pritzker administration last year, did not respond immediately to a request for comment. The email in question, first reported last week by WBEZ, was sent by Mike McLean, a former lobbyist for ComEd and a close advisor to Madigan, to two officials in the administration of then-Governor Pat Quinn. McLean sought leniency for Forrest Ashby, a longtime state worker who was facing a disciplinary hearing. The Chicago Tribune reported Saturday that investigators are examining whether the rape in Champaign remark referred to a man who sexually assaulted a young girl after being released early from prison. A source told the Tribune investigators are looking at the case of Scott Wayne Thompson, who is being held at a state facility for sex crime offenders in Rushville. Thompson received early release from prison in May 2010 and then was charged with and convicted of sex abuse in February 2011, records show. When Thompson went to the Rushville facility, Ashby was working there as a hospital manager, according to McLean's email to state officials. Director Sullivan had a long and productive public service career as a state senator, and the governor is grateful for his willingness to serve in the administration. Director Sullivan put together an outstanding team at the Department of Agriculture, and as a result, the department's work thrived, Pritzker spokesman Emily Bittner said in a statement. In a statement first reported by WBEZ, the former ag director said the inquiry from Pritzker's general counsel led him to a review of my own personal emails from the same period of time. My search discovered a forwarded copy of McLean's July 31, 2012 email reported by WBEZ. I shared this information with the governor's general counsel, he said. Sullivan said summer 2012 was a stressful time as he was in the middle of a re-election campaign and preparing for cancer surgery in Baltimore. I was already well aware of McLean's efforts to keep me informed of his advocacy on behalf of Ashby, and I simply did not read the entire forwarded email, he said. Had I read the email thoroughly, my reaction would have been disgust, and I would have immediately notified proper authorities. Nevertheless, the email was in my inbox, and not reading the entire email led to my failure to immediately respond as I would have. Bottom line, I accept responsibility for what was truly an unintentional oversight and the subsequent inaction. Jeremy Flynn, who served as Sullivan's chief of staff, was appointed by Pritzker on Monday afternoon as his former boss's interim successor. That concludes the first portion of our reading of the Tuesday, January 14, 2020, Pantograph. I'll be back shortly to read the second portion.